As you know, we're trying to do what I suppose others have never done before we were born, and that is compare the book of Proverbs with the Epistle of James. As you know, there's no comparison in their size, but you'll find that the themes that are in one are quite often developed in the other. And tonight, we're going to speak on the subject of the tongue, or the idea of speaking and the use of the tongue. And we hope we'd have helped to do that. Now, we're going to read in Proverbs chapter 10 to begin with. Now, there are about maybe most of 200 references to speaking and tongue and all in Proverbs. So I need to read the whole book to you if I was going to read all. But we'll read a few verses in chapter 10, and that will maybe do. Now, verse number 6. Blessings are upon the head of the just, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Now, verse 11. The mouth of a righteous man is a well of life, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Wise men lay up knowledge, verse 14. Wise men lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. Now, look down at verse 31. The mouth of the just bringeth forth wisdom, but the froward tongue shall be cut out. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked speaketh frowardness. Now, chapter 13 for its brief reading. And verse number 3. He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life, and he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Now, I don't think I should read much more there. Now, we'll go to the New Testament, to James, where it's better known, perhaps. James chapter 1. And just at the end of the chapter. Verse 26. If any man among you seem to be religious, and bridleth not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Now chapter 3 for the main readings. Verse 1 says, my brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all, but if any offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits into the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, are driven of fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on the fire pile. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea, is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue's in no man tamed. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father. Therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same time, the same place, sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either of vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. That will do for our readings. Everyone, I think, is agreed that we are wonderful creatures, a human being. For our perception, we have eyes to see, and we have ears to hear. Two channels into which. And then we have another channel. And that one can put out. These can take in. And this one can put out. Can you follow that? That is to say, God has given us twice as much to take in, as it were, more important to take in, and he has only given us one means of letting out, and that's our voice, our tongue. Now, it's a wonderful thing that God has made us not only, now listen very thoughtfully, not only able to enjoy things in our own minds and appreciate things in our own thoughts, but he has given us the ability to express and to say what we want to convey to others, so that we have the means of communication, the ability to speak to others, and the ability to use our tongue to convey what would be in our minds and what are in our thoughts. And you say, I never thought of that much. No, I know we don't think on these things, but God and his wisdom in creation has given us the ability of speaking. Every mother waits to see the day when her little one will learn to speak. No doubt lisping words at the beginning and maybe finding them difficult enough. But again, as time goes on, the speech develops and the communication is then more precious and easy to enjoy. Now, what we do want to think about is this. We're going to divide our thoughts into maybe about only about three thoughts tonight, three major thoughts. They'll be fairly major, as you would know, if we get through the minute, the meeting, and we don't want to waste the moments. First thing is, we want to think of how to manage our tongues, to control them. Now, we're heard about bridle and so on. We'll deal with that in a moment. And then we need to realize the possibility of misusing the tongue. Now, that has been very strongly stressed in these readings. A tongue not used right is a serious matter. And we all find that that is important. And then we're going to think of how much, what we can do, how we can minister with our tongue and use it for the glory of God. Great to think to your soul. Listen to it. Don't let it die in your mind tonight. But throughout all eternity, there's something in you that will continue to be useful to the Almighty throughout the ages to come. Marvelous to think of that. But when it's silenced here on earth, we hear nothing more of it. But then, when in that glorified body, and even in the spirit form, the redeemed of the Lord will use their tongues to fill the ear of God and the ear of Christ with joy and pleasure throughout all eternity. Isn't it great that we can use our tongues not only for mistakes and so on, but we can use them for the glory of God and to the honor of his blessed name. Now I hope a thought of that will thrill our souls before the meeting's over. Now this great matter of controlling the tongue. Now to begin with, of course, we're all agreed, aren't we, that it's out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaketh. So that if you're going to bring anything out of your mouth, it's already inside the being before it's expressed. I suppose the scientific men would tell you that the first thing's imagination, and then that becomes a thought, and that's developed into an expression. These men that do some thinking, they would tell you something along that line, if that be the scientific way of thinking it. The imagination of the heart, and then the thought developing, and then the words expressing it as best we can, communicating it to others. Now that is marvelous, but we need to remember that we're fallen creatures. If you could get that away from me, I'd be greatly relieved, but I can't. And a mother along I would live, and a mother along you would live. We're still in fallen creatures. We've got to remember that. It's very humiliating. There's nothing inflating about it. It leaves us feeling very depressed at times. When we discover that we're still fallen creatures, if we read the Bible until we could scarcely keep our eyes open, and if we prayed until the skin was off our knees, we'd still be fallen creatures. Don't let us forget that. Don't get away up in the sky as if you're so spiritual that you have lost all possibility of failure. That, again, would be a dreamland. That's not true. Now, we need to learn then that we have got a tongue, and in our minds we've got to grasp this. That tongue could speak to the profit of all, or it could speak to the harm of all. For that reason, we need to put a bridle on. That is to say, now we don't sit silent. Now don't you get that into your head. This meeting's not to put the dummies home. I wouldn't want to send you home a dummy that you wouldn't speak or that you'd never open your mouth. And sometimes indeed when people's not even agreeing too well, there's not too much speaking among them. A man said to me one time, I think I was quoting it not so long ago, he said, did you ever have a deaf and dumb dinner? Maybe you people in this country wouldn't know what that was. A deaf and dumb dinner. That is, they were sitting at the table, but they weren't talking. Now, we don't want that. That's not the point. It's not a question of putting a bridle on people and putting, as it were, a hook in their mouth that they never open it again. But it's putting a bridle on in the sense it's not that the horse is stopped forever and can't move, but the horse is controlled. Now, that's what we've learned from our reading, that we are to bridle it. That is, we're to have the mastery of it. So that we just don't say a thing because we can't help saying it. Or, oh, it just come to me and I just flashed it out. No, we keep control. So that we are not just rattling off things without thought. We are saying what we ought to say, and we're saying it freely and happily. It's not a matter of getting into a rigid kind of thing. But we're be careful that we don't say things that we shouldn't say. And we say things that we ought to say. You see, a number of brethren in assemblies, now you listen to me, they make no mistakes on the Lord's Day morning. Did you know that? They make no mistakes. Of course, they never open their mouth. That's a pity. I would love to help someone on that line. I don't want to deviate from what's in my mind. But mind you, it's not only important to know how to control our tongue, but to control it not only in a double sense, to keep it from saying things it shouldn't say, and to allow it to say things it ought to say. And you know, if you keep, I was going to call it quenching the spirit, maybe you're not letting me away with that, but I'll call it that for sake of convenience. If you keep quenching what the Lord gives you, eventually he gives you nothing more. You would be left sitting there and doing nothing. So that's why many brethren never take part. They have smothered any exercise that the Lord gave them in their earlier day. And for that reason, they never developed what ability that the Lord might have given them to have. Now, we want to think on these things. Getting control, getting master of the tongue. Now, you need to learn this from James. Not as this. But there's no man can do that. Oh, then somebody needn't stand up there like a fool telling us to do something and then tell us that nobody can do it. What are you making a fool of yourself? You don't need to contradict yourself. No, I'm not. Just a minute. You see, what man can do, God can do. Now that, to me, is vital in all things that we try to minister from the platform. We don't merely tell people the truth of God and say, now that's how God would have us live and how we'd have us act. But we must ever stress in public ministry and in our private thinking that it takes divine help to carry out this, for God can put a muzzle, as it were, and put a control, and put a bridle on our tongues, and give us the wisdom so that we can use them properly, and for his glory, and for his honor. Now that to me is precious, because you see, I hope you're all agreed, aren't you? I hope you are, that in heaven itself, the spiritual atmosphere will be such, and all the spirits there will be in perfection, and they'll be absolutely under the control of God throughout all eternity. We'll still be depending upon God, even in heaven. Maybe you don't believe that, but I do. I'll still be depending on God, even in heaven. We need divine help even there. Now, that would mean to say that as we keep in touch with God, and as we get the mind of God, we see that out of the abundance of the heart. Now you see, you have to watch the well from which this is springing up. We had the figure here in James of the can't have salt water and fresh water out of the same, in the same well. It won't work. That is to say, God, in the wonderful grace of his heart, he has purged us, and he has cleansed us, and he has given us a new heart, a new interest, a new desire. And he would want that fostered and developed. And as that develops, then we are coming out from our lips what is for the glory of God. You see, the reason why we cannot always express in our lips what should be expressed is simply because the well's not there. We haven't the well stored up, and therefore there's nothing to come out. When you haven't the well filled, you see, it doesn't flow out. It just doesn't raise. The spring doesn't come up. So these are very weighty matters, and it shows us the importance. Now, I hope you're getting that you have a right control of your tongue. Under divine power, and under divine guidance, and led by the Spirit of God, your tongue can be a wonderful instrument. And it needs to be under control. Don't let it run wild. Now, I know the common phrases, you hear it all the time. Oh, well, that's just him, you know, he just rattles away there, and he doesn't hear what he says. And he doesn't mean the half of what he says. And he's far worse than he bites. You've heard that your child listens to, haven't you? Look here, Saint of God, you've no right to bark. Any more than you have a right to bite. You're neither have I. This idea that you can just rattle away, oh, I doesn't mean the half of it, and he wouldn't see, he just comes off with whatever he thinks. Now, that's not scripture, dear, so you have no relations for that in your Bible. That certainly shows the bridle's not on. That the horse is running away. And it's not being under control. And it's running wild. So that is important. Now, we are going to speak on a wee bit sadder side of stuff. And that is the damage that the tongue can do. Now, if you go through your Bible, I know you'd get weary with it, never. You'd be amazed. But the many things that are said that the tongue should never have been guilty of doing. It is pathetic just to read it. It leaves me very humiliated. For instance, we speak about a lying tongue. People telling lies with their tongue. I wouldn't think any Christians does that because a liar's not a safe person, as you know. But Christians need to be very careful that they're upset. Now, I don't know, make a difference, please do now, between a man making a mistake and telling a lie. They're two different things altogether. For instance, a man's watching me a stop and somebody says, what's the time? Oh, I say, it's 20 past four. And maybe it's a quarter to five. And he's told the truth because he's deceived. But he's made a mistake. And that's not a lie. But if he knew it was a quarter to five and said to somebody, it's only a quarter past four, that's a lie. You see, he's telling someone that's not true. Now, we need to be very careful that we tell the truth. And that is most important for us to remember. Then there's another way in which the tongue can be used that's very sad and very grievous. And it can be used for boasting. Men bragging and boasting about themselves or about their property or about what they have or what they possess. Then that again is condemned in Proverbs, the boastful tongue. Oh, it's dreadfully sad. And then it can be used for cutting, like a sharp sword. And it would cut and hurt and harm. You know, many a dear child of God has been wounded, not by somebody's fist. Don't get misunderstand it. But wounded by what was said to them. Said to them something cruel that was cutting to their very bones. Now, you wouldn't want to use your tongue like that, neither would I. Not a dreadful thing. That you could actually use the tongue in your body to hurt a fellow believer. And say something to them that was definitely grieving their very souls. And they'll maybe feel the pain of it. But if Mr. McKelvey said a thing to me one time, I think it's worth thinking about. He says you could so hurt a Christian that you could never help them. They would accept no help from you from the day you hurt them. Now, I don't want you to be all getting sensitive on every wee hint or something. You think, oh, she's me, he's up or something like that. We're not so childish as that. Men have to say things that are from the Bible, and if they hurt, they don't mean to hurt anybody, but they want to correct if things are wrong, and you don't want to blame them for that. But we don't want to be always self-soaping or anything like that. But we do want us to see now that it can be very hurtful. Very hurtful. Some of the things that have been said to me and about me, now they were hurtful. I just admit it. You say you carry them up in your pocket. Well, I don't worry my head much about them. But if you knew some of the things that have been said to me, you'd be amazed. I'm not of any importance, and you know that. But people saying things that they shouldn't say, and that are not right, and grieve the Lord. And it'd be an awful thing to be using the tongue to cut and to harm and so on. Then again, the tongue can be used in another way that's very wrong, and that is in the idea of flattery. People giving you false praise, and they don't mean the half of it. You know, the danger, of course, as you know, is to get somebody's favor. They flatter them, and they make them think that they're somebody that they're not. And they know right well they're only flattering them. They're only praising them, and it's an empty chat. They don't mean it at all. They don't believe they're the valuable person that they're making them out to be. And if you're that stupid to let them pour into your ear a lump of flattery, you might think you were somebody. If you didn't know yourself and do your a wee bit of self-judgment now and then, you'd maybe think that you were even worth something. Indeed, you could reach a stage now when you'd be thinking you were twice the man you are. And that'd just be flattery. Just a lot of flattery. And there's no reality about it. Now, that is very sad. Of course, people can flatter and deceive and work wonders along that line. And yet their ends accomplished by doing it. Because sometimes when a man's flattering you, he's looking some favor from you. And he thinks if I stroke him the right road, you know, I'll get it. If I give him a wee tap on the back and tell him he's a great fella, he'd never do it for me. I mean, you people are sometimes crafty along that line. Now, these are things that are very serious. Then we gather from this James passage that the tongue can not only be flattering and so on, but it can act like a fire, and can make a fire. You ever hear a remark was made, and somebody made it, and it spread like a fire through the forest, and consumed the trees? All going back to a misuse of the tongue. Somebody said a thing, and maybe when they had it said, you know, they didn't realize it would be so destructive. But you see, it can be like a fire. It begins small, and then it spreads and spreads and spreads. Again, to quote Mr. McKelvey, you bear with me. He was telling us about somebody got up and said, that a preacher had said that somebody spot, and it was as black, it was somebody spot of a crow. Somebody spot a crow. Well, now the preacher said it. And then when they got it all examined, I'm cutting the story a whole lot shorter. All the man had said is he spot up something was as black as a crow. He didn't mean that the man spot up a crow at all. But you see, they just misunderstood the whole thing. In other words, they just carried, when the story got the fire had spread, it had spread far bigger than was ever intended. He just simply had said something very simple, and you see the way it had gone, as if the man had made the biggest fool of himself it was possible to make. Now these are things we need to watch, dear soul. I can tell you that I'm long enough on the roof. Not that long, but I'm not quite saved, as you all know. And then you have seen many a fire start. Sometimes the fire brigade's not too good. And the old machines have been out of action, and not as good at putting out fires as we should be. But mind you, you can start something in an assembly. You can start something in these ways that are very serious. That is very serious. And we need to be careful that we don't light a fire. And then, We have to realize this, that when we have said something, now we used to quote it, and it's very true. I know it's not maybe often, it's not often said you'll never get tired of it, but mind it's true. Boys flying kites haul in their white-winged birds. You can't do that when you are firing words, when you are flying words. Thoughts unexpressed may sometimes fall back dead. But God himself cannot recall it when it's said. Mind you, when it's out and said, you can't pull it back. Give no string to draw it back. So be careful, man. Be careful what we say. And be careful that we are conscious of the fact that the tongue can be a sad business. It has started many a problem and raised many a difficulty in God's assemblies and many a sore heart and many a sad heart and many a tear shed and many a sleepless night. All because somebody opens his or her mouth and should never have done anything of the kind and should have said what they said. Now at times we make mistakes. You can be for seems being that didn't. And if you make a mistake and you tell someone, that's a pure mistake I made. I'm making them all the time. Some of you people would hardly realize how many I make. I'm an expert at them. And I feel ashamed of myself sometimes. I make mistakes. Now that's a weakness. At the same time, if you can rectify it right away, that helps the situation and keeps the fire from spreading. But you don't want to spread propaganda or anything like that. Now, one other way that the tongue is misused, I don't want to spend all night on it, is a miserable subject to deal with, and that's slander. Now, slander is a serious thing. And quite often Christians have suffered under slander, which is very serious. Now, we know that evils are evils. And if people are guilty, it's sad and serious. But if people are not guilty and they're slandered, it's very serious. Because they're being dealt with as if they were guilty when they're innocent. Now that is very hard to bear. You see, very blessed Lord. Now you listen to it. My blessed Lord was blamed. Now he was blamed. And they had a measure of truth for saying what they said. Because they said, this man, he said he would destroy this temple and build, and they cast it up to him in the very trial. And you see, dear souls, he had stated what he believed was perfectly accurate and true, was misunderstood, misrepresented. And the story, just that wee twist in it, that wee twist in it was just enough. And that was slander against the Son of God. Oh, to think of it, that actually my blessed Lord, who when he was reviled not again, when he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. And many a dear child of God has had to just simply bear the untruthful slander that was spread abroad about them, and had to live and bear with it until perhaps God in his grace, and may in his grace, have vindicated them and cleared their character of any slander that was against it. Now we mustn't go on with that. Now we want to get at another side of things. And this to me is most interesting and most helpful. Possibly in reading the James passage, you have never maybe thought, but it was mainly instructions about how to use your tongue. You say, that's what you've been doing already. You've been giving us that whole talk up until now. But now you get this well into your mind, that it has to do with teaching, with masters, is the word masters. And he says, now, if you offend not in word, you're the same as a perfect man. Now, what James has in mind is this, the communication to others of what we know and the great use of the tongue. You just think of it, how wonderful it is. I've already spent a wee while, and I don't want to spend any longer at it. Isn't it marvelous to think that here's a tongue of mine, and here's a tongue of yours, and it's in praise God? Isn't that a great use for the tongue? You not regret that? Every note of thanks that left your lips, you never say sorry if I ever said it. Not at all. That's something you can rejoice at. But then, to think of the wonderful possibilities of a well-used tongue for the benefit of others. Now look, be wise about it now. Look at how many of us here, particularly the man who's speaking, and he owes a debt to all who poured their words into his ear. Was it when they used their tongue? But I would never have heard. Now, the trouble with many of the younger people is when I tell them about Mr. So-and-so said this, Mr. So-and-so thought that, that's only a name to them, you see, because they're not as long on the road as I am. I'm only 70, what you say, but I mean, they're not as long on the road. And they don't know the men that I knew.
But, oh, I couldn't express, now I'm not going to exaggerate, but I couldn't express the indebtedness that I have toward those who use their tongue to help and to be an instruction to me. What about you, dear brother? And what about you, dear sister? Is it wonderful, the possibilities of your tongue? If it's used right. Now, we'll go back a wee bit simpler. We will get at it again in a way that you'll easily understand. Isn't it great that multitudes of us have used their tongue to tell the gospel? That was a good use for it, wasn't it? It was God for it, wasn't it? Aye, we heard it. And we believed it in our own case. But, now look, dear soul, there'll be thousands upon thousands of sinners thanking God that they heard a man's voice. Not talking about himself, but telling them the good news of the gospel. Oh, we're loved. Don't we sing it at times? I hope you do sing it and really believe it. I love to tell the story of unseen things above, of Jesus and his glory, of Jesus and his love. Oh, dear souls, is it a wonderful thrill to think that a poor mortal that deserved to be in hell forever not only heard the gospel and believed it and was saved from eternal doom and fitted for heaven, but allowed to use his tongue to tell others? Hope you use yours plentifully. Dear souls, don't be holding it back. Now, I want to say something very dogmatic. Now, don't be cross with me. Please do your best to hold your temper. We'll be speaking on that one of these nights in England. Sorry if you lost it tonight. Now, don't get angry with me, if you can help it. But look now, where we are greatly deficient in our day is that we haven't the freedom of speech when we're speaking to the unsaved the way the older generations had. They could hardly meet a man, but they had some word for him about his soul and about salvation. And in their own simple way, they just, whatever conversation started, they just turned it round. Turned it into the gospel. Now, the nearest to that that I have seen in recent days is a man that I don't know much about him or not, but that man's surgeon that was over from America. Now, he could meet nobody. You know, the Americans made up weaknesses now. We don't want to blow them too high for a big enough of themselves. But they might have some weaknesses, but there's one thing about them, that they don't hate. They don't hate. Now, Mr. Surgeon could meet anybody. And meet them straight. He met a nun coming off the plane or something, or coming out. No, coming out of the hospital, I think, when he'd been wheeled in or something. And he says, tell them about him. Well, what would fit a man for heaven? And she says, nothing but the blood of Christ. So we had much more to say to her. You see, maybe she'd been trained to teach him to answer in that way. But what I want to get at is this, like, are we hiding it? Are we keeping quiet when we should be speaking? This is the bit we want to get at. You give a tongue. I hope you use it. Well, you know, the biggest part of the people that you meet with will never be in a gospel meeting. Do you hear me? And if you're working with somebody, or if you're doing business with somebody, do your best to get a little word of gospel into them. They're not making a whole show of yourself or anything like that. Doing it nice and wisely and getting it turned around. You see, one of the things that you young men might think about, the boys you're working with. You dear girls, maybe in an office, I don't know what you do around here, whatever work you're in. Used to be factory people working, but whatever you work in, use your opportunity. I often tell the people, and I'm very thankful for it, that at least six of the boys that I work with I meet in heaven. And they're thankful for that. I can remember boys, now you wouldn't what I'm talking about, but they'll go way in among the heat, way in among the timber, and hide to get thinking about their soul. Trying to get saved. They're simply speaking to them. Now what about it? Could we not get the gospel going in that way? Where's your neighbor? You're doing business with them. I'm sure. Now some of you remember the late Mr. Albert Story. I'm talking about a golden man. And he had a wonderful way of thinking of things, but there was a neighbor down the street a bit. And he thought, now, I never spoke to that man about his soul. And he saw a man taking a wheel, taking a wheel off and changing a wheel. You know what that means, don't you? He had got a puncture and he was changing a wheel. So this is my opportunity. So he walked down to them just casually. And he says, how are you? And the man said, oh, how are you, Mr. Story? Or Bob, or whatever you call them. And, you see, I'm in debt. I owe you something. I don't come here to pay it. And I'm not a different reader. See, you don't owe me any money. No, it's not money I owe you. But I'm in debt to you. And I wanted to pay it. He says, you know, we've been living in the same street for a good while, and I don't think I ever told you about God's way of salvation, and I've come down now to pay my debt. What about paying your debt, dear sister? Now, you don't need to be on the platform for that. You know that. What about your paying your debt, dear brother? What about just, in a simple way, telling people, now, there's such a thing as being made ready for heaven, and there's such a thing as being saved. Now, you may not get too much over to them. Now, listen to me. But you could start an interest in their mind that they would go to meetings and hear the gospel. I mentioned there about six of them. None of them were saved at my meetings. I don't think I was preaching at the time. But some of them went to meetings. I've got boys to go to meetings with me whose people just detested the very thought of the gospel and wouldn't have looked at me the gospel. And I recycled with them. Went with them, not merely just tell them to go to the meetings. Went with them. When you went with them, then they sat with you. And you sat with them. And they heard the glad tidings of the gospel. Many of these are big matters. I hope we realize the wonders that we could work with our tongue. Now then, the main thing that we need to think about is this, the tongue being properly used in God's assembly. If we all just sit, what kind of meeting would you have? Surely that wouldn't be right. Now, I want to get one point over very strongly, and that is this, that every assembly is influenced by the teaching it receives. You let me know what teaching's been given in an assembly, and I let you know what practice is there. Because whether we like it or not, we're all influenced by our teaching that we receive. And that means to say that proper teaching produces proper Christians. The late Mr. McCracken was talking to a gentleman, I don't mention his name. I said, these young fellows, he says, have a Bible class on, and he says, they go way down to that time. Of course, it wasn't going to these long distance places. They thought it was going to Port Rush, which was a great place to get for a holiday. You know, they don't know where that is now, hardly. That's only around the corner, you know, nowadays. But at that time, going to Port Rush was a great thing for people to get a holiday. And he says they go down there, and he says they run about there with no caps on them and run about like food. He says, you see, they annoy me. Would Mr. McCracken say to him? He said, that's a self-reflection on the teaching you've given them. Like, we needn't complain if people don't act right if we don't teach them right. That's not right. And if we don't show them from the scriptures what they ought to do, we needn't complain if they don't do it. Why should we? After all, an assembly is molded by the teaching that it receives. So that's why it's so solemn. That's why it's emphasized here, be not many teachers, because you receive a greater judgment. That is to say, it's a very responsible thing to do what I'm doing tonight. Very responsible thing. Because it means that I'd have to give an account of it. If I'm misleading you, I'll have to give an account of that. And if I'm in any way misinforming you about the scriptures, I'll have to give an account of that. So these are solemn things. Now, he's very anxious to let us know that the tongue controls things. That is just as the rudder controls the ship. So the tongue controls, the teaching in an assembly controls it as it makes its way through the stormy seas of time. And that leaves a heavy burden on people's hearts. That if the people are in the assembly and they come to the assembly and they don't know everything when they come. If they do, it's a pity to have to receive people like that, for they're not there to learn. But a good many come. And as I came into the assembly as only a schoolboy at the time, I had to learn. I don't know if I've learned much yet or not, but try to learn. And you see, they need teaching, and they need help. It doesn't mean to say that They don't need instruction. They do need their minds developed in spiritual things. I thank God for the teaching I got in my own assembly. Men like Mr. Fairfield, that's maybe one of the few that you have known, was in the same assembly. And men like that taught us the Word of God. And that helped us in our early Christian day. Now, that's a great use for the term, isn't it? To build up the assembly. To not only give God his portion. Now, let us be changed. That's what we started off with. We not only use it to give God his portion, but we use it to instruct and help one another. In the Bible readings and the different other meetings where we are together, we minister and teach from the Word of God. We use our tongue in that connection. Now that to me is very serious and important. Then again, we know that there's a solemn side to it. That false teaching in an assembly can have drastic effects. Drastic effects. And we need to be careful about that, because sometimes certain teachings have got into certain companies and has spoiled them and has ruined them and has been a hindrance to them. Now, there's one other side. I don't want to keep you too late, but there's one other side of things that we can use our tongues and use them wisely and helpfully. And that is, we read it, of course, in Proverbs and so on, but the idea of using the tongue in a soft way when people are in trouble. Not everybody knows how to speak to people in trouble. I got me a whole lot of plaster and a whole lot of stuff. Sometimes not too much said has more weight than if it's too much said. But isn't it nice that we can pour a word of comfort into a troubled breast? That's not good. Will not make you thankful if you've left somebody a wee bit relieved in the midst of their trouble. Now, not all trouble's not a bereavement, you know. Sometimes people have troubles that they don't like to talk about, and they're never mentioned in the prayer meeting, and they're glad just of a word of sympathy and a word of help. To use our tongues to comfort an aching heart and to heal a wound that has been sorely felt is certainly a wonderful privilege here on earth. Just to think that we could actually speak a word that would help. A word of encouragement. Now, maybe you don't, of course, around here. I'm not suggesting you people know anything about this, but quite often in other areas anyhow, you'll come across a Christian that has lost heart. You know what I mean by that. And that's not a good way to word it. They've gone discouraged. Maybe they drop out and can't come out to the meetings. Oh, you say, get them a good school. Now, that'll not really help them. Now, you needn't try it. I give them a good dressing down, I tell you, when I finish with them, they've been taught to get out. Now, that's not the way it's done. And you needn't be thinking that. And you have got to remember even that when Christians fail, now I know this will not go down too well. Even when Christians fail, you have to treat them tenderly. Now, we need to know that. We don't know this sometimes. Oh, we can bring down the big stick and give them a slap with it. Now, that's all right. Now, we're not teaching looseness, don't you think that? But we need to be gentle and thoughtful. I used to hear way back now before some of you were born, I suppose it was the late Mr. Andrew Fraser. Now, I don't know. He might have been a later night, and I don't think so. He was dead before I never knew many of her. And there was a man had got away from the Lord and wasn't doing too well. And he was ploughing up on a field with the horses. And Mr. Fraser went to visit him. And when the man was looking at him, Mr. Fraser went down on his knees, and I don't know how many times he got down and prayed before he went near. So that when he got to him, the man knew that this is a praying man that's coming to see me. And whatever way he talked to him, he was able to see him recover. I think it's lovely to be able to see a soul recovered. Now, I know there's an empty profession. Don't you think I'm a shallow man in that way? I know there's empty profession. And there are those that are not saved, and you never can recover them. I know that. But then there are true believers now. This is what we need to think about. There are true believers that could do with a word in season just from you. And you may be the only one in touch with them. And you can be the means of using your tongue for their good and for their comfort. I hope you can follow that.
That's not unkindness, now. That's kindness. That's God's pity for the saints that are let us feel for them.
Now, they maybe give you time enough when you go to see them or something like that, but
you just have to bear with that. That's all right. That's all right. You expect something like that, but you eventually can see them steadied and see them helped. And they can't say much whenever you treat them kindly. A soft answer turneth away wrath, doesn't it? And sometimes a word in season just can be a great help to God's dear people. I could maybe mention some, but we don't talk too much. But I remember one brother told me, he says, I had a conference. And there was a hymn spoke to me loud and plain. Someone gave it out, I think I don't know if I gave it out or not. Must I go an empty handed? Thus my dear Redeemer meet. Not one soul with which to greet him. Lay no trophies at his feet. And this is the bit that spoke to him and to him. Oh, the years of sinning wasted. Many a dear child of God. And you know, they've wasted years. It would be a pity if they went on like that. Wouldn't it be great to see them recovered? And maybe a word from your lips. And a word in season from your heart. And maybe even a tear with it. Just a softness that would make them feel somebody cares and somebody longs to see me recover. I hope we'll use our tongues right. Oh, we'll be using them for all eternity to the glory of God. May we use them to praise Him. May we use them to help the saints. May we use them to spread the gospel. May we use our tongues for God's glory until we see His blessed face and never, never sin and never make another mistake with our lips again. Shall we pray?